Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Herod Antipas, the king, soon heard about Jesus because everyone was talking about him. Some were saying, "This must be John the Baptist raised from the dead. That is why he can do such miracles." Others said, "He is the prophet Elijah." Still others said, "He is a prophet like the other great prophets of the past." When Herod heard about Jesus, he said, "John, the man I beheaded, has come back from the dead." For Herod had sent soldiers to arrest and imprison John as a favor to Herodias. She had been his brother Philip's wife, but Herod had married her. John had been telling Herod, "It is against God's law for you to marry your brother's wife." So Herodias bore a grudge against John and wanted to kill him. But without Herod's approval, she was powerless, for Herod respected John, and knowing that he was a good and holy man, he protected him. Herod was greatly disturbed whenever he talked with John, but even so, he liked to listen to him. Herodias' chance finally came on Herod's birthday. He gave a great party for his high government officials, army officers, and the leading citizens of Galilee. Then his daughter, also named Herodias, came in and performed a dance that greatly pleased Herod and his guests. "Ask me for anything you like," the king said to the girl, "and I will give it to you." He even vowed, "I will give you whatever you ask, up to half of my kingdom." She went out and asked her mother, "What should I ask for?" Her mother told her, "Ask for the head of John the Baptist." So the girl hurried back to the king and told him, "I want the head of John the Baptist right now on a tray." Then the king deeply regretted what he had said, but because of the vows he had made in front of his guests, he couldn't refuse her. So he immediately sent an executioner to the prison to cut off John's head and bring it to him. The soldier beheaded John in the prison, brought his head on a tray, and gave it to the girl, who took it to her mother. When John's disciples heard what had happened, they came to get his body and buried it in a tomb. This is the word of the Lord. Not a text we like reading very well, right? Yay, thanks be to God for that encouraging word. Have a nice Sunday. These two stories are a pretty fascinating juxtaposition. I can very honestly say I have never preached on either one of them, much less both of them together. But they're a pretty interesting parallel, right? They're both about kings. There's dancing involved in each one. There's very different outcomes. I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Greatest Showman. Anybody? If you haven't, you should. I'll wholeheartedly endorse it. I think it's a musical. I think it's one of the best movies ever made and maybe one of the best musicals of all time. It's so much fun. It's the story of P.T. Barnum, who, Phineas T. Barnum, grows up as a poor boy, very enamored with one of his neighbor girls who's this daughter of a very rich person. And this family doesn't think P.T. Barnum is worthy of dating their daughter. But he has all sorts of creativity and imagination, and he paints this vision for her of a world that they could create themselves. He promises that they can make a life together and it will be wonderful. And he does it. He ends up pulling this ragtag group of people rejected by society. Giants and bearded ladies and he pulls all these people into the show and they become this family. They were rejected by everybody else, but they're there for each other and it works. And he's able to build his wife this big house he's always promised he would do for her and his daughters and they have this wonderful life, but it's not enough for him. And he ends up mortgaging their house and leveraging everything they have to do a bigger show, and he brings in Jenny Lind, the Swedish Nightingale, to sing and buys out the theaters and opera houses across America to make this happen. And as he's doing this, he realizes, he's been telling himself he's doing it for his family, but as he leaves his family and he's putting everything on the line, he starts to realize that he's not doing it for his family. He's doing it for himself. He's doing it because he believes that at some level enough applause will make him feel okay, that he is worthy. His wife and his kids are telling him, "Come home, all we want is you. You're enough for us." And instead, he keeps chasing something more. I think these two stories are very much an invitation for us to consider who our audience is. There's two lines in each story that tweak me. The first one, the story of David. It's a fascinating story, right? The Philistines captured the ark. David defeats the Philistines. He's crowned king, and the first thing he wants to do is bring the ark back to Jerusalem. And so he starts the process and doesn't work very well. You know the story of Uzzah reaching out and touching it. Uzzah falls over dead. David is afraid of the ark, leaves it in Obed-Edom's house. Obed-Edom is blessed beyond belief, and so David decides maybe it's not such a bad idea to have the ark at home with him. If it worked for Obed-Edom, it'll work for David. And he goes and gathers all Israel. And they have this incredible celebration where there's this procession carrying the ark back to Jerusalem, and David is stopping and sacrificing this sacrifice of thanksgiving and peace offering every six steps. And he's dancing. It says he dances with all his might before the Lord. Kind of a cool line. Who's David doing this for? He kind of doesn't care what anybody else thinks, right? He's doing this for God. He is so all in to God as his audience that he is jumping and twirling and giving everything he has for God. In fact, his wife thinks he's looking a little bit silly. She's mad. He gets back to Jerusalem and walks into his home, and Michael's like, "Wow, aren't you a distinguished king? Way to comport yourself with dignity out there." And I love David's response. "Oh, Michael, I will become even more undignified than this for my God." David knows who his audience is, right? He knows why he's doing this. He's doing this for God. Herod, on the other hand, the second king in these two passages today, also has a feast, a celebration, people gathered. Instead of Herod dancing, Herodias or Salome, depending on your historian, comes in and does this dance, and they're moved enough that Herod makes this great vow in front of his guests, saying, I'll give you half of my kingdom. And being very shrewd, Herodias tells her daughter to go in and ask for the head of John the Baptist on the plate. I love that line. I don't love the line, but it's a very revealing line. Herod doesn't want to do it, right? He knows this is wrong. But because of his audience, he feels compelled to do it anyway. Who is Herod's audience? What does Herod believe is going to make Herod okay? This is the huge difference between David and Herod. Is David is playing for God, and he's okay with even his wife thinking he's ridiculous. Herod, on the other hand's wife wants him to do something he knows is horribly wrong, and because he's made this vow and he's bought into these ideas about kings having to follow through on their word every time or else they look weak, and deciding that if he doesn't follow through with this and he's doing something he knows is wrong, but he thinks it's better to do something wrong than look weak in front of his guests. Who's his audience? And what's the result of that? Herod does this thing, and it ends up causing incredible pain and suffering, right? I mean, he does something awful. It causes John's disciples an immense grief. Jesus, immense grief. You read in the other Gospels, when Jesus hears this news, he's crushed. He goes out by himself. It's tough. When we get our audiences wrong, we can end up hurting the people around us in really harmful ways. If we think that our path to, there's this wonderful line in The Greatest Showman where it's like I was blinded by the lights, running at the speed of always chasing more applause. Somehow thinking there's enough approval from these other human beings we share this planet with that will make us okay. I don't think there ever is enough. There's no amount of human applause that's going to make us feel good about who we are. But on the other hand, if we're doing what we're doing for God, then it really doesn't matter whether anybody else is cheering. It really doesn't matter whether anybody else notices. If we're doing what we're doing for God, there is this incredible joy inherent in the life of serving one another no matter what happens. And this story with David, I love how it ends. Did you catch, well, by the way, the author here is really intentional in pointing out that David is wearing a linen ephod. If you didn't catch it, that means this is a priestly garment. He's wearing this white robe that was something that usually only the priests wore. So in doing this, David is taking on the role of a priest. And a priest is someone who connects the human and the divine, someone who reconciles the human beings around them with God's presence. And very much what David is doing here is connecting Israel with God. In his dancing and worshiping for God, he has gathered all Israel around. As he is making these sacrifices, they are included. Listen to this at the end. When he finished his sacrifices, David blessed the people in the name of the Lord of heaven. All of them. Then he gave to every Israelite, man and woman in the crowd, a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, a cake of raisins, and a barrel of wine. Then they returned to their homes. This is this massive community celebration where everybody is invited to the feast. David is connecting every single one. This isn't just about David having this special connection with God. David's special connection with God, because God's his audience, everyone else is invited in. David is blessing everyone with this. The text even goes and points out, and this is kind of rare, he doesn't just do it for the men who are able to fight in his army. He's giving it even to the women. Everybody, everyone is invited into this blessing. Everyone is shared with because we are so blessed and highly favored. That blessing cannot help but overflow to the rest of us. Exodus 19. I think this is part of God's bigger vision for David, for Israel, for us. When God calls the Israelites out of Egypt, he meets them on Mount Sinai. And he says to them, "You know what I did to the Egyptians. You know how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you will obey me and keep my covenant, you will be my own special treasure from among all the peoples on earth. For all the earth belongs to me, and you will be my kingdom of priests." A priest is one who connects the divine and the human. And God's vision for Israel, his vision for us, is that we would be a kingdom of priests, a kingdom of people who are connecting the blessing of the divine with the human around us. Because David is clear about who his audience is, because he knows that he's not doing this for the approval of human beings, but he's doing it for God, he is then free to bless everyone who crosses his path. Because Herod's unclear about this and he thinks that he needs to impress all of these other human beings, he ends up causing incredible harm to the human beings around him. We are the same way. We are invited into this vision of God's where we are here to bless and where we're not doing it to impress the people around it. We're doing it simply because we have been blessed, because we are blessed and highly favored. And that's enough. In fact, that's more than enough. We've been given so much, we can pour out all of the gifts we've been given to those around us, and we don't have to worry. It doesn't matter whether they notice or not. It doesn't matter whether we get applauded or not. We've been blessed, and so we can bless. This is the vision Jesus spreads as he is here too, right? Jesus is this priest in the line of Melchizedek, this king and priest who comes and heals all the brokenness around him, who feeds all the people around them, who invites everyone into this incredible feast. It's the vision in Revelation, right? When God reconciles all things, that there is this massive banquet that all the nations are gathered. And there's enough place at that table for you and for me. This tale of two kings is really just a tale of two human beings like us, We all have position, we all have power, we all have connection and resources. And we have to decide how we are going to use those things. Are we going to use our time, our relationships, our wealth in order to bless the people around us, to help connect them with God? Are we going to try to use them for ourselves, to impress other people and make ourselves look better? I think only one of those paths actually gets us what we deeply desire. Because the truth is, when we start giving of ourselves, we find that we are more connected, not only with God, but with the people around us. We find we belong when we start sharing that belonging with those who we share this planet with. I think these two stories are wonderful because they invite us into God's vision of existing for something more than just ourselves. Herod tries to elevate himself, but David doesn't care. In fact, he says, I'll become even more undignified than this. No big deal. Because I know who my audience is. My prayer for you this week is that you would know who your audience is too. May you do what you do each day, not for applause, but for God. And as you do that, may you find a joy that transcends anything you've ever known. Would you stand as we sing our hymn? Number 589, O Master, Let Me Walk With Thee.